Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, your host, Caroline Foran, author of Owning It and Own It in the US, and of course, The Confidence Kit. This week I am joined by someone you might not know, you might not be familiar with unless you follow me on Instagram. It's my brother, my big brother, and I can assure you it is essential listening. My brother Daniel, who's 6 years older than me, 5.5 years older if you were splitting hairs, who I always thought of as completely bulletproof, he actually had his own experience with anxiety throughout his life. But instead of anxiety about being, you know, away from home or having tummy troubles like me, that kind of thing, for him it was anxiety brought on by a stammer. So if you or anyone you know lives with a stammer or experiences any kind of social anxiety at all, I mean, it doesn't have to be because of a stammer, this episode is completely for you. I've learned so much from chatting to my big brother, and I hope you will too. I'm incredibly proud of him. It was quite an emotional episode to record, as it really wasn't that long ago when he would have avoided answering the phone, let alone recording a podcast with an audience that I'm now delighted to say is up there in the thousands. So this is a good one. It's a very important one to me. And thank you for listening. As always, thank you for subscribing. And I'm so grateful for your reviews. And yeah, enjoy. To go back to early childhood, like, do you remember a time, the earliest time that you kind of were aware that you had a stammer or you had a speech difficulty that made you feel like, oh, this is quite stressful?
I think, I remember when I was quite, maybe 5 or 6 when I was aware of it, but it didn't have a negative impact on my life. It didn't make me kind of sad or down. I think when I first began secondary school, that's when I noticed, oh, this is actually a big deal, and it was starting to affect me. I think the anxiety began for them.
Yeah.
I think part of that was because I went from quite a small primary school into a much bigger secondary school. Mm-hmm. So a lot of new people, new teachers, and yeah, that's when it began to really become quite.
But even if you didn't have a stammer, like, I remember hating those first few years of school a little bit as well, and I didn't have that kind of difficulty. And to be honest, I didn't really have anxiety until I was a little bit older. But you're right at the point where you're starting to care what everyone thinks about you. You're suddenly so self-aware. So for you, it must have been like a double whammy of trying to fit in, but also trying to, I guess you would have tried to hide the fact that you had this difficulty.
Well, for me, it's even more basic than that. So even saying my name. So people who generally stammer have a real difficulty saying them because it's the only word they can't substitute for anything else.
Mm.
And for me, I remember that first year, even second year, third year of secondary school, you know, you just have a new teacher and you go around the class asking everyone's your name. And so you know where she is and you're coming up maybe four or five people. And
you start to feel the anxiety.
Your heart is starting to beat. You're not quite sure if you're going to pass out.
Oh, God.
And then it gets to your name and you're just praying that you get it out. And it's just, for me, it was just all about, oh, God, if I can't say my name, they're going to think I'm just so stupid. And so will the teacher as well. So for me, it was a real basic feeling of people literally think I don't know my own name.
And the reality is, you got how many points in the leaving cert? You are actually annoyingly, insanely smart. So there was never any doubt about that. But I suppose just...
Well, there's book smart and then there's street smart, right?
Well, you're pretty street smart as well. But I guess it does come back to what do people think about me. And at that point, like, I mean, I don't really remember. It wasn't something you spoke about. And I don't even think I was aware because it was just normal to me that maybe you would delay in your sentences a little bit. It didn't seem to affect your life because you didn't talk about it, because you didn't say it. But only now that I'm an adult and now that you're kind of really addressing it in every way, only now I'm learning how shit it was for you. Like there was times when you didn't want to answer the phone, right?
Yeah, well, I think maybe until I was 16, 17, I used to dread answering the phone. I think luckily when I was that age, there was no real thing as mobile phones. But I remember if I was in a room with someone else, I would just assume they would answer the phone.
Yeah. And you had a coping mechanism if you had to answer the phone.
Yeah. So actually it's funny because my dad used to always give out to me for it, but I used to say, yeah, hello, because I couldn't get out the H in hello. So he just thought I was being, he was like, Daniel, why are you being so rude saying, yeah, hello? It was actually like, it sounds rude, but that's my little trick.
And did you explain that to Dad?
No.
So in a way, he wouldn't have known.
Oh, yeah, this is it. I was, obviously, I felt a bit of shame, a bit of guilt, but whatever I felt, I thought it'd be much worse telling him the real reason why I would say, yeah, hello, instead of hello.
And at what point in your life do you think it was at its worst and it's most challenging for you in terms of the anxiety that came with it?
I think, well, there's probably a few points. I think one that comes to mind is beginning college or university. And so I was doing this physics degree and I thought, oh, grand, physics, just lots of numbers on pages, not much getting up presenting. But lo and behold, the first year we had this presentation course to do. And I definitely missed the first 6 or 7 lectures purely because I just did not want to be in that room having to stand up in front of maybe 30 people and say a few words. But then I said, look, I have to do it. So the end of year assessment or the end of term assessment, half of the marks went to you presenting, you know, a little 5 minute or 10 minute spiel on some physics. And I remember just not sleeping at all that night. And
because I mean, a lot of people would struggle with sleeping the night before anyway.
Yeah.
And then you're adding, it's kind of like,
yeah, for me, it's just more of an even basic emotion of like, there's one thing. Yeah, I know everyone probably feels some sort of anxiety around that.
For you, it was like tenfold because you also had the difficulty of just the simplicity of the words coming out of your mouth.
100%. And a lot of people who stammer, what some of the tricks they use is they say, okay, well, if I can't say this word, I can say this other word.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, before I gave that assessment, I was like, okay, well, if I can't say this word, I can say this word. But it was just becoming like, oh, I've got plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D for if I can't say this word, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like whether people have anxiety around that or anything else, something that people fall into a trap of is avoidance techniques. And, you know, I would have, you know, I didn't go away. I spoke about this before. I didn't go on J1s and I always sort of said, oh, I have to work or I need to, you know, but it was avoidance so that I didn't have to admit that actually it just makes me uncomfortable. So did you, I think you avoided things for a long time before you even addressed that it was affecting you.
Oh, 100%. It was just my first reaction I would avoid. I would avoid getting the first round on a night out in a bar. I would.
Why that?
Well, because I thought, okay, if I've a few drinks in me, I might. And generally, when I drank up to a limit, I would get more confident with my speech. Mm-hmm. Obviously, after that, it might go the other way. But up to certain points, like, well, if I just have one or two drinks in me, then I go to the bar and then I could order the round. Now, for me personally, if it was just me and my own, my favorite drink would maybe change once a week, because depending on what I could or couldn't say.
Really?
But you just learn to cope these things and you just shrug it off.
So you'd have like a vodka and coke 1 week, and then, well, what is it easier? Because if you change it often, is it easier to get it out?
Yeah, or less so pressure, I think, or something? Generally when you stammer, you've got certain feared words, which can change over time. But the more you have this one feared word in your head, the more you avoid saying it.
Did you have a particular word?
Well, besides my name, I think I used to love drinking pints of Carlsberg. And then after a while, I realized I had difficulty saying Carlsberg, especially in a bar. You can imagine it's, you know, loud music, barman saying, come on, what's your order? Yeah. There's more pressure on you. And then I just developed this fear of saying the word Carlsberg. So I had to change from Carlsberg to Heineken, and then until that became a feared word. So it was just this never-ending cycle of moving from feared words.
And do you think you were just so used to that fear and used to trying to have those little mechanisms of coping that you weren't even aware of how much it was impacting on your life? Or were you deeply aware but you didn't want to talk about it?
I think when I was younger, yeah, I would just brush it off my shoulder. But as you get older, I think shame and guilt starts to set in a little bit more. And as I got into my 20s and mid-20s, I would get more upset with myself for, be it not saying a certain word or avoiding a certain situation. So I would get more frustrated at myself for not doing the right thing or saying the right word.
And that's just obviously going to create more tension in you, and you know.
Oh yeah, it just builds it up.
Was anyone ever mean to you about it?
To be fair, I probably got off reasonably lightly in terms of getting slagged. I think maybe I just hit it so well that it wasn't as obvious. But I think, in all fairness, I've heard stories from other people who have stammers and stutters, and I think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I got off pretty.
So there was no
lightly.
Sort of one experience that confirmed to you the shame that you felt about yourself?
Well, actually,
dish it. Tell me.
It's funny. Yeah. So when I was 19, I was summoned for jury service. Mm-hmm. You probably remember this.
Vaguely.
So you're kind of called into the Dublin, I guess it's the District Criminal Court, or mm-hmm. whatever it's called. And you get picked to serve on the jury, and then I think both sides can say if they want you or not mm-hmm. three times. So unfortunately for me, I got picked to serve on a jury,
and it was a pretty like
it was a
murder
it was
case.
A pretty yeah. But in that room, there must have been about 500 people, and when you're sworn in to be a juror, you have to repeat words that someone tells you. So it's like, I do solemnly swear, yada, yada, yada. And of course, you can't not say the word. You can't say a different word for it. And I don't know how long it took for me to repeat the words that I was told to repeat. But it could have been 5 minutes, could have been an hour. I was like, whoa, what happened there? Is it over? But then it was over, and people just kind of got on with it. No one said anything to me. I was like, all right, who's the next juror? Mm. But that was a particularly, I guess, shameful experience for me.
And do you think that, so you're obviously like self-stigmatizing a huge amount. Do you think that so much of the problem is because of that? And if you didn't have that stigma, like, is it self-perpetuating for you?
Oh, it's, well, for me, it was a complete iceberg effect where, you know, you may have seen me physically struggle once or twice, but there was this massive bit underneath the water, and this was me just struggling with myself in terms of I just couldn't really tell people what I wanted to say. Only for my very close friends, people didn't know me. They must think I'm such a odd little man. You know, barely saying a few words. Maybe says a few more things after a few drinks.
Yeah.
But
and so things got easier when you were old enough to drink alcohol.
Yeah. Well, I guess a lot of boys, when they start drinking first, part of the attraction is that, oh, I feel a little bit more courageous now. I can maybe talk to girls. And for me, yeah, probably me more than most, the fact that I could drink and get drunk and I felt more relaxed, I felt more fluent.
Fluency when you drank.
Yeah, but I guess this was just driven by me feeling more relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was definitely the partly why I used to drink. And
that would be like a slippery slope, and I kind of feel it as well, where like I think, oh, like a drink will take the edge off, and you could just easily be like, oh, just have another one, take the edge off, you know, and be doing it every day. And suddenly it's a crutch, and you have to be like, okay, while it does have some, on a small scale, can have some therapeutic effects, it's not really addressing, it's not going to go away, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously then there's all the negative effects of alcohol. Did you talk to Mom about it? Was there resources at the time? Was there any kind of support?
So I remember when I was about 7 or 8 years old, I went to some child speech and language therapy, and I guess at the time, I'm not sure if it was very evidence driven, but it was stuff like slow down, because I think generally a lot of children who first develop stammering, it's because they're just speaking too fast. And while that might work initially, if you don't catch it at that stage, all the mental aspects of it start to build up. So I did a little bit of speech therapy when I was younger, and that was mainly around speaking slower. So then I just kind of, I don't know what happened, just we stopped going. Nothing to do with Mom.
Your terrible mother.
No, not at all.
It's okay, she doesn't listen to my podcast anyway.
Yeah. No, but to be fair though, she did a lot. And then I think when I was about 19, I had gone for some more private therapy, and I did have maybe about 6 weeks, and I actually got some benefit from that. But
so you went from 7 to 19?
There may have been one or two things I had done during school, but I guess I didn't get much benefit. I'm not sure if it's just come along so much since then in terms of the kind of therapies they give to children, but I guess if it was working, I would have kept on going back, but I guess it mustn't have been working for me.
Mm.
And I just didn't think of maybe saying to Mom or whatever, look, this isn't working, can we get some other therapy? It just didn't even come into my mind. I just thought, right.
You just had to live with it.
Mm. And then I got some therapy when I was maybe 19 or 20, and that was better. That was more kind of focused on certain things, but it didn't really attack the psychological side, which I think that's where it fell down. And that's if you do ever go for therapy, if they're not doing that side of it, you may ask for your money back.
Yeah. That's just such a...
Yeah,
I don't know if it's just to me, but it's just an obvious thing that you would 100%. Have to work around the mental blocks that are triggering the physical blocks in your language.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's basically two types of stammers. There are really, really obvious ones called overt stammers, and there are ones like me that are called covert stammers. So for the covert stammers among us, it's such a mental game. And if you don't really address the mental side of it, you're not going to really get any sort of long-lasting control over your stammer.
And it wasn't until you were quite an old man that you decided to really tackle it. So you're going to be 37 on your next birthday? Basically 40?
I'm a very young 37. Thank you very much.
This is just our nature. I could not possibly inflate your sense of self. So, what is it? 2 years ago? 1 year ago you decided... What made you think... You know, you had gotten to that point. You were obviously coping well, but you felt like you hadn't really addressed it. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so as I got older, I developed more kind of subtle tricks. While I wouldn't avoid as much, I was still avoiding some things. And I felt in work there was a bit of a glass ceiling coming to me, where if I wanted to progress to the next stage, I would have had to put my name in the hat for various presentations, chairing meetings, yada, yada, yada. So I just decided to get a bit proactive, and then also there was this other thing about where, as you say, I'm getting a bit old, and a lot of my friends were getting married, or it was coming on the horizon. So, and of course, with that, I thought maybe I could be a shoo-in for maybe one or two best men.
Mm-hmm.
And now I know a lot of people dread the best man speech, but for me, again, it would have been extra hard. Even if I had drank a bit during the day,
mm-hmm.
I just didn't want to be in a situation where if I was someone to be a best man, I would have sleepless nights about the speech. So I said, okay, look, what can I do? And I had talked to one guy who had been a best man. He had quite a nerve-wracking experience, and he had done Toastmasters. I said, oh, well, so, and if you don't know, Toastmasters is this worldwide public speaking group.
Pat Dively actually recommended on the podcast I did with him about public speaking that anyone and everyone who has a fear of it should go and do it. And I think I need to do it as well. And I can't, I just have to say, like, I know you're going to tell me about it, but I am in awe, completely in awe, and have never felt pride like it than to see you do that and face that adversity when I think I know a little bit about what it feels like to have that fear. So what was it like when you did that then? I can imagine terrifying.
Well, not as bad as you think, but the reason why it wasn't as bad is that the Toastmasters club that I went to, so there's so many thousand in the world, but that one, it's one of three in the world that cater for people who have stammers or social anxiety. It's called the King's Speakers. Toastmasters is named after the film The King's Speech.
Mm-hmm.
So I think going there and knowing that people had stammers or social anxiety, it made it slightly more bearable.
Safer space.
Yeah. Now, I must also add that if you were to walk in there off the street, most of the time you wouldn't know anyone had any kind of difficulty speaking because they're up there, they're doing their thing. But maybe one or two out of 30, you would say, oh, this guy has some sort of a stammer. But most
and would
of them,
they would they sort of address that and say, look, I have a stammer and this is why I'm doing this? Or would they
no,
let it
they,
just... I always wonder, is it something that you feel like you feel better if you put it out there?
Everyone who was there was aware that someone had some sort of, besides the kind of standard anxiety around speaking, someone had a particular, be it a stammer or some sort of form of social anxiety. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning of each Toastmasters, the president would make a little spiel and he would say, we're one of three in the world who do cater. Not that others aren't welcome here. So everyone is aware that everyone given their speech on that night has something. But as I said before, unless you yourself had a stammer where you might know some of the tricks people were using, it would be very hard to tell if they actually had stammers.
I remember you were doing all this stuff and I was telling my friends about it and they were like, what? They didn't even know you had... Because I guess to you, in your head, it's, you know, you think a delay is like hours.
Yeah.
Whereas I hear a delay as... a second. I do remember the frustration of people finishing your sentences for you, and I think I do that as well. I think people just do that as in a supportive way, but it's obviously so unbelievably frustrating when you're trying to get the words out.
Yeah, there is that, but you know, they're just trying to help you, and I think once they're made aware of it, they probably say, oh, I'm really sorry, I shouldn't have done that.
So what was your first Toastmasters experience like?
So my first Toastmasters was probably, so once you sign up, you do this course of, you have to make 10 speeches, and the first speech is called a icebreaker.
Okay.
And you have to say a bit about yourself and say why you're here. And generally most of the icebreakers in that particular Toastmasters was about, well, I've got a stammer, I've got social anxiety. So I remember I was still quite nervous going up and I had all my notes, but I had practiced it a good few times before, so I felt okay. Look,
as any really proficient speaker does.
Yeah, but I was definitely, when I came off that podium, I was like, oh god, I didn't realize how much of an emotional toll it took out of me. And I just, as soon as I finished, I went home, I just slept for about 10-11 hours. But I must say as well that just everyone was so warm, and like for everyone given their first speech at Toastmasters, you do always say that was really great. You know, you looked like you were, you know, cool, calm, confident, in control. So it was just nice to hear all those words. It was very reassuring that what I was doing was going to help me.
And I think, you know, on its own, it might seem like, okay, you did Toastmasters, but what a huge, huge thing after all the... What age were you, 35 when you decided?
For Toastmasters, I was 35, yeah.
At 35 years of age, to make that decision for yourself to do something about it was... It was a very emotional time for you.
Mm.
And then you obviously thought you were on the right track, and then you came across your course, the Maguire course.
Yeah, so I had known about this program for quite a few years, and I heard mixed reviews. I just thought it was some funny breathing thing where you sound like having a mild heart attack. People may have seen there was various documentaries on BBC and ITV about it.
Okay.
So I guess it's probably one of the more famous speech therapy programs. And the reason why I had decided to do it was that there are some people in my Toastmasters who had done the program.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, look, most people there, because I just thought it was for really... people were for people who had really obvious stammers, but people that I'd met in the Toastmasters club had said, look, half them you wouldn't even know they had stammers.
Yeah.
So I said, well, look, if they're telling me I should do it and they seem to be in control of their speech, I should probably think about it. And then as well, my girlfriend, who funnily enough is a child speech language therapist.
So romantic.
Actually, well, I hope she doesn't mind me telling me this, but she herself, when she was really young, about 5 or so, had a stammer herself, but she was one of the lucky ones who grew out of when she was about 7 or 8.
Bitch.
Yeah. But she said to me, look, you've got nothing to lose.
And so she was a good support.
Yeah, for she you. Was.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
And I guess you just mentioned there, before you tell me about the course, you mentioned that, you know, people were saying you wouldn't have even known that someone's having a stammer, or maybe they have perfect speech, but it doesn't really matter how someone else perceives a stammer. Like, it doesn't matter if I say, oh, you're grand, like, you don't even sound that bad. It's totally relative to how it makes you feel. And if you find you're struggling with it, I think this is a message that comes up in every episode I do, that people feel like, oh, I'm not that bad, so therefore maybe I don't, you know, maybe I shouldn't really worry, or maybe I'm over being over the top, or someone else is going through something so much worse. Maybe there's someone who couldn't even say hello or look someone in the eyes, and compared to that person, you're probably in pretty good shape. But it doesn't matter. It's your experience, and it's relative to you, and we're all going through different shit on different levels, and everyone's feelings are valid, which I think is something 100%. We're only really recently starting to kind of allow for. So you sign up for the course. Are you shitting yourself, or are you excited?
I'm definitely, I wouldn't say anxious, but I'm, feeling like this could be something either really great or this could be nothing at all. And I just want to say, like, this, before we go into it, while this course works for me, there are other therapies as well.
This is not sponsored content.
This is not sponsored. For now, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to sponsor the podcast, here's my email.
Here's my bank details.
Yeah. Here's my IBAN.
So I guess a little bit of a kind of a summary. It's essentially a 4-day boot camp.
Okay.
And it's like 12-hour days, but to really change how you think about your speech, I think it was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So in the first half of the course, you deal with the physical aspects of it. There are ways to breathe. Even right now, I'm actually breathing in a certain way that gives me more control over my speech.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other half of the course is to really attack the psychological,
which is such a huge
side
thing.
And you do things that I myself have been running away from for all my life beforehand.
So tell me, one of the experiments that you did, when you rang me and told me about it, I was like, you are not serious. Like, I wouldn't do this myself. It's talk about putting you into the lion's den of your fear.
Yeah. So one thing that we do in this course, and I know they do this on other courses too, not just the Maguire course, is that they want to show you as a new student that most people don't really care that you have a stammer. It's just more your perceptions. So one of the things we do is that we're out in, so I right now I live in London, and we go out into the public and we try to talk to 100 people.
God.
Now we can ask them where things are or do they have the time or something like that, but the idea is that you go up to them and you, in a controlled way, you show them that you stammer.
Okay, so you're not trying to hide it, you're trying to actually show it.
You're showing it, but you're doing it in a very controlled way. And most of them, so for example, if I say, where is Oxford Circus? I'd say, excuse me, do you know where Oxford Circus is? Now, maybe to most people, they wouldn't even register that I stammered on the O. But for me, that is a huge deal to tell someone, look, I'm asking for something which is hard enough, and I'm also telling you that I've got a stammer.
Is that the most vulnerable you've ever felt?
Yeah, I guess in some ways, yeah. And it's what was nice was that people just said, oh, it's this way or that way. You also do things, well, you can do things where you walk into department stores and you go up to board sales assistants and you tell them what you're doing. You tell them you're on this speech therapy course and you obviously stammer in a controlled way, and most of them they're just so bored, they want to think that, oh, that's really interesting. So you get most of the time you get really good responses from these people saying, oh, that's really, really nice, thank you for sharing. The thing that I did that was, I guess, now this is not me trying to blow my own trumpet here, but it's things that
I think you should blow your own trumpet. This is amazing.
Well, it's things that, so I've even managed to get some, so right now I'm trying to become a coach in the course, but I've managed to get new students to also do this.
Mm.
So the coach I was with on that day when I was going around London talking to various people, he said, okay, look, here's a challenge for you. And okay, I said, okay, fine. He said, so let's go into a few coffee shops and make a announcement. I was like, ooh. And I said, okay, look, I know because I don't want to do it, I should probably do it. So we first asked the manager of the coffee shop, listen, do you mind if I just make a quick 15-second announcement? We just want to spread awareness about stammering.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. And to be
fair, unless they were a dickhead, they'd have to say yes, right?
I think some of them just conscious of not trying to disturb the
okay
customers. So with my coach, I just formulate what I was going to say.
And at this stage, what level of fear were you feeling?
Yeah, I was, because I gotten such a good reaction so far from that day, talking to various people, I could have been feeling a lot more anxious, but I was still, yes, there was still a very, my heart was definitely beating a few more beats.
Really outside your comfort zone.
So I just said, okay, I'm going to do this. And there must be maybe 30 people in the coffee shop, and they were all just, you know, on their phones, having some coffee. And I said, excuse me, please, can I have your attention for a few moments? I just said what I was doing. I was on this course that stammering affects 1% of us. And thank you for your time. And I thought that they'd be like, yeah, whatever. But to my amazement, I actually got a standing ovation. So I was like, holy shit, this is like great. And then I did another one afterwards. But the reason why I'm saying this is because in the second coffee shop, a guy came up to me and said, look, thank you so much. My brother stammers. And I said, well, look, here's what we're doing right now. Here's the website. Mm-hmm. So it was just nice to kind of, A, say what I said, and B, have a nice reaction where someone actually listens to what I was saying in the first place.
It's brilliant, because when you are willing to put yourself out there like that, it's kind of cathartic for you. You're dealing with it yourself. But on the flip side of that, someone else is seeing you deal with it and you're helping them.
Yeah.
Which is even more rewarding. And I think then it becomes a real collective, you know, we're all in this together. And it's just, then it feels really worth it. Because sometimes I feel like, Jesus, I put so much of myself out there and I show all my vulnerabilities. And I worry sometimes, is it too much? But not only is it helping me feel more like accepting of how I feel, but other people are like, thank you for kind of saying that you're not, you know, not everything's perfect. So you did that course for 4 days and you were like a different person afterwards in terms of your emotions and how you felt, what you had kind of come through. The significance of it for you was huge.
Yeah, for me, it was probably one of the most important things I've done in my life. So I go to work on the Monday morning, and of course, I had told my work that I was going back to Ireland for the weekend.
You didn't even tell them you were going on this course?
No, I think I told maybe 4 or 5 people that I was doing. Because I was in that mode beforehand. I was like, I'm still trying to hide my stammer. Or I used to tell myself, I just don't want to bother them about it. But if I really think about it, I was the one that was hiding my stammer. So I come into work on Monday and I just tell them all where I was. And I think in a way I was kind of hoping for well done, but they're like, God, I didn't even realize you had a stammer. And then it's all turned back around to their,
oh God,
to their screen.
Like the realization when no one gives a shit.
Yeah.
Everyone is just so caught up in their own.
Exactly.
And that's the exact same conversation I had with Laura Whitmore, where like, you know, we're talking about worrying about what people think, and they give you like a blip of their attention for the day, and then they're straight back to, you know, we spend the amount of torture and turmoil we cause ourselves.
It's like, do you realize how hard that was for you to say?
I know. Oh God. So anyway, it's kind of funny that you didn't, you know, I suppose then what matters is that you felt it was
an achievement. For me, it was nice to at least say openly, I'm working on my speech.
And do you think in that 4 day period, your relationship with it changed and the shame you had started to shift?
Yeah, I think I realized that you're told in the course, and I think I assume it's pretty evident, there is no cure for stammering. But, and again, this just worked for me on this course, but what I did realize was that I've got a toolbox now that if I do feel I'm having a bad day for my speech, I know what to do. I know if I'm getting a little bit rusty in my technique, or I know if I need to push my comfort zones. Whereas before, I would just hope that it would all fix itself. Whereas at least now, I felt like I had much more control. Now, I still have my days where I don't feel like I'm speaking as confidently or as in control as I want, but I do. But then if that is the case, I know why. It's because I haven't really been working on my speech. It's something that I have to do every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, Barry always reminds me, like, sometimes, you know, if I have a day where I feel like really anxious again, and I think, Jesus, am I going backwards? And he's to constantly remind me that, like, overall you're going up, and you might be two steps forward, one step back some days. But what you're saying sounds exactly like, okay, there's no cure, but you're owning it.
As a wise man once said, you're owning it.
But that's it, like, it's the life change, it's a game changer, you know, when there's things that we can't get rid of, we can't run away from, but we say, okay, things have changed for you because you've accepted it, because you've said, I'm going to work with it rather than against it. And I just, it's so many, of, I, what I think from what I, the chats I have with people is that so much of their struggle comes from this constant resistance and tension and trying to have things be a different way and trying to deny the reality of where they are right now. And for whatever series of events in life, you came to have a stammer, and that's okay. But I also want to know, you know, do you think what you've gone through and pushing through that fear and expanding your comfort zone, which you have, obviously has positively impacted how you feel about your stammer, but it must have bled out into other areas of your life.
Oh, 100%.
What have you learned?
What have I learned? Well, try not to sound very cliche now, but...
No, please go Oprah on me.
Yeah, I think I've learned that, well, A, it's never too late. I think people just assume once you get to a certain age, that's your peak, and then it's just a...
What's the point? Like,
what's the point? And it definitely made me think, well, look, if I can get some sort of a handle on my speech, what else can I do? So I said, well, you know, I'd been in my job for a couple of years, and I said, well, why don't I just go for a new job? And I must admit that partly why I didn't was because I would have obviously dreaded the interview process.
And you've been in the same job since the year dot.
Yes, it's been about 8 years.
That's not too bad.
But not too bad.
So now, after doing the course and after all that, you have now, you're in the process of, you're working out your notice, and you're going to start a new job, and you're going to a completely different environment, which brings its own set of challenges. And how do you feel about that?
Well, I think what I've learned is that, you know, you have to work on your comfort zones, and it's a bit like probably, you know, going to the gym. If you don't keep on pushing yourself, you're not going to make any progress. So it was definitely giving me that, I guess, sports mentality to just keep on pushing out.
But you want to push, but also be nice to yourself and not...
Yeah, I'm definitely guilty of being very hard on myself, but I have learned if I do have a, or at least if in my view, I've got a bad day at my speech, I think, okay, maybe for a few minutes, think what went wrong, write down what I can work on, and then just put it behind me. Whereas before, I'd be like, oh, I can't believe I didn't say this, I did say that.
So just think about the internal monologue in your head when you were maybe a teenager or in college, and you were like, oh, for fuck's sake, like, why can't I just not have this? How did you think about yourself? How did you feel about yourself then? And then we'll compare it to now. So what kind of things would you say to yourself back then?
God.
How did you judge yourself?
Yeah, I'd say it would have been very harshly a lot of self-hate, saying, you know, you effing this, you effing that, I can't believe you can't say this word, what must they all think of you? Because while I was book smart, I thought, well, if this guy is book smart, but he can't even remember his own name, how does that make sense? So there was a lot of that. There was a lot of, I guess... And I still have it now, but not to the same extent. You do think what people think of you. But back then, it would have been very specific towards, this guy can't even say his own name. Is he okay? Is he a bit special, as they say?
Did you worry that you seemed like you had a difficulty in your cognition?
I was worried that people just thought I was a little bit slow.
Were you embarrassed about yourself?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, there was definitely the shame and the guilt.
Did you like yourself?
I don't know how to answer that. I think I've always been relatively hard on myself, but I think back then I was extra hard on myself just because I couldn't do the simple things like say my name or say certain words.
Mm. And then now, with where you are and just things like maturity and experience, and I'm sure having a loving relationship that supports you and encourages you is definitely a contributing factor as well. And, you know, having the support of your amazing sister would obviously help as well. And the course and everything that you've done. How do you feel about yourself now?
So I think I still have a little bit of negative self-talk, but it's nothing compared to what it was even this time 2 years ago or this time 15 years ago. I've definitely learned through my age to, as you say, not be as hard on yourself. And if you feel like you haven't done something particularly well in your eyes, then just, okay, well, what went wrong? What can I do next time? And then just move on and try not let it influence what you do next.
Do you feel more worthy now? Not that you were ever not worthy, but do you more accepting of yourself now?
Yeah, I think I think so. And I think now one of the good things that I guess learned on the course is that it's quite nice to talk about your vulnerabilities. And I don't just mean with your nearest and dearest, but maybe to some of your friends who you mightn't feel as close to in that respect. Like being a young man,
It's tough.
And sometimes you go out with the lads after work, and it's just quite nice to tell them what I've done, and then that actually opens up the conversation as well for them. Well, they think, well, if he's been very open about his stammer and his struggles, sometimes it does spawn other, as I say, real conversation rather than just the...
Do you think men are particularly bad for that, with not wanting to show vulnerability? Is it a macho thing?
Oh yeah, 100%. And especially if you've got a group of them together, it's even more difficult.
And how have your friends responded? Your most macho-iest of friends?
All really positive. I was surprised. Not that I didn't think they would say anything negative, but the fact that they said, look, that sounds amazing, I'm really proud of you. I remember after my first course, and I was... So you're told after you're on the last day of your first course, the most difficult thing now is walking back into the real world where you have to think like you were on this course. And that means being open about your stammer. And I was asking this guy who had gone through his first course maybe a year ago, and I asked him what he did. And he said, well, you're not going to like this, but I think you should do it. And I was like, what is it? Do some sort of a social media update.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, okay. So I had met my girlfriend after the course, and we went out for a celebratory meal, mm-hmm. and we had a few drinks, and then I had told her about it, and she was like, well, you can at least type the social media post now, and then in a while...
You don't have to post it.
So we went for a nice meal, had a few drinks, and she was saying, look, come on, you've had a few drinks now, how about that post? And I said, okay, I'll do it. So I just pressed it, and then I turned off my phone as if it never happened. Literally hit my phone. And then went to sleep that night. And then the next morning, so this was on a Sunday night, you'd think there wasn't going to be too much social media activity.
It's actually the busiest time.
I know, yeah.
People are lying in bed.
All those lonely hearts.
Yeah.
And then the next morning, I couldn't believe the amount of response, be it likes or be it messages, and even of people who I had barely talked to in God knows how many years. It was just a nice thing to be so open about it.
And did you have people who you had no idea had a similar experience, say, reach out to you and say, I actually struggle with a stammer myself? Because I had that with when I put up on social media back then when nobody talked about anxiety, and I said I actually kind of have fallen apart. There was a particular couple of lads who I went to school with who I would have thought were unflappable, who I never would have thought would ever even want to say that they had any kind of vulnerability, because I guess we all just think it equates to some kind of weakness in us. And I was so surprised that there was people who I never would have thought, they were saying, I really struggle with anxiety and you're articulating what I went through. And that was just like mind blowing. So you must have had that experience as well?
Not probably to the same power or impact, but yeah, I had one or two people come up to me and, well, not come up to me, but
yeah,
message me saying, look, really impressed with what you did, and then explain what they were going through. Now, one of them had a stammer, one of them, I think, had some, it wasn't, I don't know how to characterize it, but something in that social anxiety world. So it's just nice to, I don't want to say inspire them, but just to say, look, it's actually not a big deal. We all have our own shit, and A, no one really cares about your shit anyway, truth be
That's
told.
That's what we've learned, yep.
And B, what's the worst can happen if you're actually just open about something that you've hid for so many years?
Yeah, and when you actually open yourself up to being, allowing yourself to be vulnerable, I think ironically makes you kind of invulnerable.
Yeah.
Because in order to be vulnerable, you have to sort of know your values, know your worth, be intact in how you think and feel about yourself. Therefore, nothing else can really affect that. So it's kind of like an oxymoron, but one that works really well.
I see what you did there.
You see what I did there? For people who are listening and thinking, looking for some really practical advice, do you want to share any tips on like things that you, where someone should start, maybe where should they go, or should they have, like, would you have a conversation with a loved one first if they're sitting at home and they have feel such a weight on their shoulders of like not knowing where to begin? What would you do?
Well, I guess if they're comfortable chatting with their loved one, definitely do that first. But there are some great resources online. There is the program I went on, which I'm currently part of, is called the Maguire program. There is also the British Stammering Association website. There is the Irish Stammering Association website. And they have, I'm not that I've ever done anything with them, but I know they have meetups. And I think one of the great things, if you do have a stammer and you're still a little bit unsure of being open with your friends who maybe don't stammer, they organize meetups. And it's just great to talk to people who, you know, have gone through something similar.
Mm-hmm. And you're working now with, you're being trained in as a coach, like you were saying, and you are helping. It's amazing seeing what you're doing. I know you don't want to blow your own trumpet, but it is a trumpet that should be blown. That sounds wrong. But I love that. Oh, God. But you are working now with like younger people. Oh, they don't have to be younger, but they're
all
course.
Ages.
And you brought someone in to have the same coffee shop experience where they announced it, and their mother filmed it and couldn't believe that they were willing to do it with you. So it's just having this ripple effect then, isn't it, of like,
oh, 100%. And I think part of the reasons why I want to become a coach on this course is that it'll make me work harder on my speech as well. So it's not like you just do one course and that's it. The kind of beauty of this program and other programs too is that it's this lifelong partnership where you go back, you do refresher courses, you ring other people on the course, you share war stories, you swap tips, and you meet up and you do little comfort challenges with them. So it's just this idea of we're all in it together, and that is such an amazing effect.
Did you ever think you'd feel comfortable enough to record a podcast?
If you told me that I was doing this about a year and a half ago, so this was before my first course, I would have politely told you to fuck off.
So you have to be proud of yourself now. Do you take time to like be proud of yourself and celebrate the relative milestones you've come through?
I do, again, without tooting one's own horn. I do.
You need to move away from the horn and trumpet analogies.
I do. If I'm, for example, if I do have a bad day now, well, if I think it's a bad day where I could have said more at a certain meeting or whatever, while I do kind of feel that little moment of, you could have done that better, I still think, but hang on, this time 2 years ago, you wouldn't have gone up to someone on the street and told them you had a stammer or even stammered on purpose asking where something was. So I do have to remind myself how far I've come.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Peace with an A, B-I, and then Peace with an I. Thank you so much.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.